Yo, and welcome back to another episode of Slay, second language acquisition for everyone. And I need everyone to know, because you won't see the video recording, that Bill made a face when I yodeled into the camera just now. Hi, it's me today, Ben.
And me, Bill.
Yay!
Hi.
Today we're talking about differentiated instruction in second language teaching. And so before we do that, we wanted to put a few reminders at the top of the show. Thank you for supporting Slay, second language acquisition for everybody. We love if you leave a review. We love if you have extra dollars lying around to throw at the podcast so we can support hosting it online. Yeah, that's just about it. That covers most of our costs, is hosting it online. So we have editing software and things to make the podcast come along. We are continuing with our book study of proficiency-based instruction, teaching grandma for proficiency by Ritz and Travers. We will be into chapter 5. When will that be? The week of the 13th, William?
I believe so.
The week of the 13th of October. We'll be starting on chapter 5.
And that's my fall break, so maybe I can actually participate.
Self-call-out. We're out there doing the book study on Facebook, on Blue Sky, and on Instagram. I think William's also on Threads here and there. So
yeah,
if you're
still
in any of those
platforms,
come join us. We're making it happen. It's been really great. If you slow chat it, that's actually been working really well, is that people have been revisiting the posts when they have the time, and we totally appreciate that. So,
and if you have any feedback on the format of this, like I know there are some people that have done some of these online like language teacher chats before, whether it be Lang Chat or Ed Chat, something like that. If you have any pointers or suggestions for making this maybe flow a little bit better, we'd love to hear it. Reach out at info@slaypod.com.
Otherwise, thanks. We're having a lovely time, and thanks for joining us. Phil, today the topic is differentiated instruction in world language teaching. Tell me, what does that even mean? What are we talking about when we're talking about differentiated instruction?
I think overall, just adjusting either through modification or accommodating our instructional practices or our materials so that all students can access them.
Totally. We know that we get heterogeneous groups of abilities and motivations, desires to learn the language in any of our courses. And so differentiation is about not just delivering the content in one singular way, about the one size fits all approach, like I'm just going to do my thing, and if they learn it, they learn it. If they don't, they don't. It's knowing the backgrounds, the interests, the needs of our students, and adjusting our instruction so that way we can meet all those different needs. What, Bill, what are some ways that differentiated instruction has not exactly panned out for you?
I think one challenge is thinking about when we get all of our learning plans or IEPs plans that we get inundated with so much information and we think that we have to adjust every single lesson to meet every single person and adapt every single thing with every single accommodation or modification in mind.
Yeah, I think that the confusing differentiated with individualized
right
is what I wanted to say.
Yeah, and knowing that like you don't have to create two versions, three versions of everything that you make so that it's differentiated. There are other ways that you can differentiate. Also, like, I wonder about your thoughts on differentiating in, like, class discussions.
That's harder. You think you're giving the same input to the whole class, and there are some students who are ready for the most simple constructions, the most simple kind of phrasings of things. And then there are definitely students who are more ready for the slightly more complex versions, the versions where you add more details, where you add connectors and subordinating conjunctions more to the sentence. And that can be hard to do that live in the moment, to remind yourself to essentially ratchet up and down the difficulty of a statement while still keeping it comprehensible and not having it be like a weird aside that you make as the instructor.
No.
Do you mean how students respond in discussions?
Yeah. And like how, I guess, and maybe we can talk about this in Girl Boss if you've got ideas, but about supporting all students, regardless of proficiency, to participate.
Yes.
So maybe that's in Girl Boss. Maybe that's something that I've gaslit myself on.
I try to be accommodating to all sorts of communication, right? That if students respond just with thumbs up, thumbs down, or kind of nodding or other sorts of gestures that I understand as communication, I can accept that. If they're responding with one word, I can accept that. I find that sometimes I'm also accepting answers that are coming in English and I'm just restating them in German. And I'm wondering if for my own practice, the differentiation for those students who continue to respond in English well into our time together, if I don't have to start offering them options, like written options that essentially they have to read off the board, or if I don't, you know, use more of those this or that sort of questions with the answer embedded into the question. I think that we've all experienced this, where some students, you got a student in German one who is just like, third day is just like complete sentence, tries to use a connector and like maybe messes it up or something. And then you have other kids again who are like well into the second year or like responding in English, even on stuff, you know, that we've talked about before. So I think that is something we can definitely girl boss a little bit later. But I think one thing that I have gaslit myself to is kind of stopping my thinking about differentiated instruction when I consider that it's often thought about for like content courses where world language is a skill that is like a different, like our outcomes are slightly different. And we do want to teach our kids content, right? The students in the room and their cultures and their thoughts and experiences and ideas. It's ideas about the German speaking world, the Spanish speaking world, the French speaking world, the Chinese speaking world, that sort of thing. But differentiating for the language feels just a little bit different. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, that's like a general teaching thing. And I'm not sure if I can do that for language, which feels so different. But I think there are lots of ways in which we can do these things as part of our class.
Yeah. Oh, another gaslight. When thinking about differentiation and we forget about high flyers and how we also have to, when we differentiate, we can differentiate up and we can differentiate. I don't want to say down. I want to restate this. But whether we're making our activities more challenging or more accommodating, when there are different directions that differentiation can go. So we do need to try to consider both directions.
I'm totally with you. I think if I have a student who, again, like that student who comes into German one third day and is just like blasting out full sentences and I'm like, all right, we're good. I tend to stop worrying about them in a general sense because I'm like, oh, they're getting it and they're coming along. But I think that they need their challenges as well to help maintain engagement with the class. And they also can be a resource to their fellow students as models of taking risk and models of, you know, trying stuff out, saying stuff, a different source of input even. Yep. A different voice in the classroom. I totally think that it's easy to think differentiation and making students who have not yet met the standard find their way to the standards. But it can also be students who have found the standard continuing in their own growth and kind of deepening their learning too.
Right. And I think a challenge there is I'm thinking about my rubric, and a rubric has to end at some point. Like, even though language progression does not, like, language is always continuing. I'm still learning words in English, and it's my first language. So our language is always expanding, and we're always getting more and more, like, complex with our thoughts and, you know, hopefully. And so, you know, it's hard to say, put a 100 on a rubric where it's really just a checkpoint, not a stopping point. And then I feel that, like, we've talked about this plenty of times, language class is not really feeling like school so much. And, like, oh, darn, I lost it.
Language class is not really feeling like school.
Yes. So when we have a rubric that does max out, but then we have students that feel like our class isn't really like school anyway, so like that is their, like, that's the goal, like, rather than, like, I do have students that are getting the top parts of my rubrics and I have to give them feedback on where to go next, but like, because it's not on the rubric, because that next level up isn't on the rubric, you know, like, I'm having some, I don't know, disconnected
technical malfunction, kind of, right? Like, yeah. It's kind of like a technical malfunction, totally.
The never-ending rubric.
I think another consideration for me, like you were just talking about feedback, is purely like the time investment to give the feedback that moves each learner forward in their own way. I maybe have talked about this season already, but like I have a class of 38 students this year. I have another class of 35, another class of 33. Giving individualized narrative feedback on kind of every little thing is just really not possible. And so, and you know, as we've covered on the podcast as well, what the sort of feedback you give may or may not be effective or more or less effective in certain circumstances, blah, blah, blah. And so, but, you know, even when I kind of like come to a good place about how I want my students to convey what feedback they want, but then I have to give it to them. I was looking at compositions. We did some compositions as a baseline at the beginning of the year, and I let students pick what sort of feedback they wanted. And then I was staring down 38 compositions that I had to grade and put some sort of feedback on, or at the very least just mark up the rubric, and like 38, you know, and it makes me feel for those English teachers out there. My goodness. But I think the time investment, and then to also invest, you know, like you said, invest in both directions towards more accommodation, more challenge, that it's just a matter of time when time can be very scarce in the teaching profession.
Right. Well, anything else with Gaslight before we move on to this article?
What challenges? They listed challenges. Intensive time, curriculum constraints, lack of PD, large class sizes, and the need for diverse learning materials. One final challenge to differentiation that you might run into is that you might want to come in with the best intentions and differentiate in all sorts of directions and still be stuck up against a textbook assessment or a very traditional sort of assessment that you don't necessarily agree with. And so you're doing things that you know are good for your students' language acquisition and you're differentiating within there. And yet that may or may not help them put the ending on the verb or put the ending on the adjective in the way that is made necessary to you by a common assessment or a curriculum. So we just wanted to acknowledge to our listeners too that like sometimes this is hard because you're between a rock and a hard place of a challenging task to do at all and a curriculum or assessment that doesn't allow for the flexibility that we would like to offer our students in their assessment, in their, what's the word they use in differentiation land, in their product. Sometimes our curriculum and assessment don't allow for differentiated products.
Right. So with that, let's get into ungatekeeping this article. It is Investigating Differentiated Instruction and the Continuing Contributing Factors to Cater EFL Students' Needs at the Collegial Level by Tajik Noor and Gulzar in the Asian Pacific Journal of Second and Foreign Language Education. So this article talks about differentiated instruction and specifically universal design for learning, which I wrote a blog about recently, so we can link that. I had to write that for a grad school course, so that's out there. And with universal design for learning, it comes from like universal design, which if you think about universal design as, for example, the curb cutouts in the sidewalk, like at an intersection, they're cut out there to help people use with mobility challenges or who use wheelchairs. And then that was the intended use for it. But we find out that it's useful for a lot more people. People with their luggage going to the airport, moms and dads and parents with strollers, maybe people on those bird scooters, I don't know. But the point being, if you make something accessible, if you try to cast your net as wide as possible to make something as accessible as possible to as many people as possible, then we essentially give everyone what they need. A key feature of this article, though, is this pretty nifty figure that they have here, which was developed in 2001 by Tomlinson and then edited it in 2010. So it starts off at the top with teachers can differentiate. And it goes on to say, teachers can differentiate the content, the process, the product, and the learning environment. So, Ben, did you want to unpack these four things a little bit before moving on?
Totally. Yeah. Learning environment is just that students are not put into an environment where they're expected. They're not like, you know, student number one, student number two, student number three. They're treated like humans with individual backgrounds and motivations for language learning, so that the teacher recognizes that and the student feel that recognition, but that also helps change the course feeling, but also content, so that it meets the needs of more students. And they come in with different proficiency levels. They come in different motivations. There are different objectives.
With learning environment, even the physical setting.
Yeah.
If you teach high school, but you have chairs meant for kindergartners, that is not an appropriate room for them. They're going to be uncomfortable. Which is, you know, then going to shut them down from understanding. But what they're saying in this article is that this is something that teachers can impact. So making sure that our classrooms are accessible to all students, that the materials that they need are in a location where they can reach them and get them when necessary, that you do your gosh darn best to print all of your posters so everyone can see them from every corner of the room, only to find out that you can't really, so you end up making it into a booklet for students to have.
Who did that?
Me.
Also me.
I mean, huh?
Also me. Right. So that's learning environment. We want it to be accessible to people. It's like the curb cutout. It ends up benefiting more students than we think if we make the learning environment, the seating arrangements, conducive to learning with all the supports available in the room, then students are going to have a better experience.
About question posters. I know some people just have the L2. Some people have the L2 with a translation. Some people start out with the L2 and translation and then switch to just the L2. And other things on our walls, like students, we can notice when they're looking at them. And so when they stop looking at them, or when we are weaning them off of them, like, we can see what they're still needing support with. And that was physical, like the learning environment.
This is kind of an aside, but I saw a teacher who said that they only put up actually the L1 for question words so that students develop the ear for differentiating between the different question words. So there are many ways to do it. The next thing you can differentiate for is content. This is setting different learning objectives. So, you know, what are the actual benchmarks that we want our students to meet? And do we adjust those down or up based on the skill level of the student that comes before us? Kind of like we're talking about with Bill's rubrics, like how do we adjust that? So how do we adjust with formative assessment, resources being available? Like you said, that is part of the content, is like question words, word walls, posters that support learning. What the curriculum is there any interdisciplinary connections that shore up student learning by connecting to something that they're learning in other courses or otherwise already know? And like, what sorts of things do we expect them to do for homework or for outside tasks? Or what? How do you cover the content if you don't have a lot of resources to cover the content with? Yeah.
And from a culturally relevant pedagogy standpoint, making the content something that is going to be interesting to students. And that's like kind of where student interest and the content that you select overlap is, you know, that's what's going to make a nice little mix of an educational experience. Mix your content with what your students are interested in, what they're familiar with. Make the 6-7 jokes. It's so much fun. And so what else about content?
The next thing you might differentiate for is process. In process, that means knowing that students learn with different preferences, learning styles as a construct, as in a student only learns if they get it in auditory or only get it in visual or only get it in kinesthetic, has been debunked. Like that, there's just no research that supports that. Those students may have preferences, and a differentiated instruction should include all of these things, actually. So how do you incorporate kinesthetic strategies, visual, auditory strategies, create flexible learning environments? So this could be, you know, sorts of seating or environments that change based on the sort of task that's being pursued. Multimodal instruction is part of that as well. Mm-hmm. So are you incorporating audio, visual content? Are you incorporating, you know, maybe it's authentic resources and things that you clipped from the internet. Maybe it's texts that the students are holding in their hand. Maybe it's real products that they're holding in their hand, something like that. And process can also be how you adjust to students, like how you find data on the students, like how are you getting, you know, the feedback loop going and assessing student needs and then adjusting to them. That's a part of a process.
What about delivery? Would that be more of content? Is content more of the how, or is process more of the how?
I think process would probably be more of the how, because content is the what and learning environment is like also a how kind of. And then the product then is what students create to demonstrate their learning. And so they're offering multiple options in assessments and in class tasks for formative assessment, for summative assessment, so that you're able to give them feedback that moves their learning forward towards the objectives that you've set, but in a way that is authentic to the student and plays on their strengths rather than maybe digging into weaknesses. So how can you balance those needs of trying to get students towards the objectives and being clear on what the objectives are, but also letting students have some choice in what the product is that shows that learning?
Mm-hmm. And then did we want to talk about, like, in the article, the next section was assessment, but
it kind of folds under, I think that folds under kind of like product and product. What I just said.
I think, like, overall, something to keep in mind, especially with like the product and content, is student choice, like giving them a say in these things as well. Because, I mean, there are some things that like students just aren't going to have a say in, but there are times where we can ask students for their opinions on what, maybe if your curriculum doesn't necessarily follow a sequential order or doesn't have to, like you let students choose what unit you do next or something like that. All right, then moved on to the student side. So like we've got the things that teachers can differentiate, but then we've got like student perception.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got,
how do these students, because so these were Afghani university students taking English mm-hmm. courses after many years of English instruction generally. The article asserted that in Afghanistan, there are not many opportunities to have English exposure outside of the school day or English class. And so that, I think, is something that we can empathize with. I think as a German teacher, this is where they're getting their content. The overall, the summary of students' perceptions of differentiated instruction is that they were appreciated the opportunities to offer feedback on their own learning, to have things that catered to their needs and to their instructor knowing them. It built their motivation and kind of learning because they felt like they were seen and included in the decision-making process about their own learning. These are university students who probably are getting into adulthood and wanting some agency. I can imagine for our secondary learners and even for our primary learners, they also want some sort of agency in their learning. And though the instructors in the study describe the challenges that we've described already, is that sometimes we just get materials that are hard to use. Sometimes we just don't have enough time. It's hard to know everything. They felt every effort that they made towards more differentiated instruction totally paid off. And even if they had the challenges of not diverse materials and traditional curricula that didn't necessarily put the students' best interests and best science, all the efforts that they made to differentiate instruction had positive benefits and helped support students from a wide variety of backgrounds. So every investment that you make into differentiated instruction pays off. It kind of becomes this virtuous cycle of, you know, you feel more motivated because the students are doing better and they're more engaged. And then the students get even more engaged because you've responded to them and treated them like human beings. Yeah. And so that's the things that we listed kind of at the top of the episode that make it prohibitive. I think there are a lot of ways to incorporate little differentiated instruction hacks or just small things that in sum add up quite a bit.
Yeah. And I think like adjusting what we're doing as teachers, even if we're just adjusting it for one student, everyone's going to benefit. So, yeah. All right. Now, how about we talk about girl bossing some of these things, such as, how do you girl boss differentiating your content.
I think, like you said, we have covered on the podcast co-created content and how powerful mm-hmm. that is for student motivation. I think that is inherently differentiated because it requires the spontaneity to respond to what students say in the moment. And we are asking, we are in true interpersonal mode when we're developing that content with students because we don't know how they're going to respond. If we're creating a character, what their creativity will produce. If we're asking them in student interviews or in card talk about their lives, we don't know how they're going to respond. And that creates an opportunity to select new vocabulary that benefits the discussion there and builds that kind of cycle of motivation. So if you can approach your content with an eye towards co-created content, I think that is a great way to differentiate it. You will create kind of a world of text in your class that only exists in that class. There are in-jokes in any of my classes because we created something together that only happened in that class. So I think co-created content is a great way to differentiate content there.
Yeah, I think I differentiated content in that, like, usually for Spanish 4, I'll start with like an authentic resource, but I'll modify it in various types of ways to make it more accessible to all students. Usually I end up making like a summary or like just, you know, kind of like blackout poetry-ing the article. And then I still print the original article for the students that want an additional challenge, going back to, you know, the differentiating for challenge. And I also do try to take student voice into account with content creation. I think, like, I've talked about it before, but I've kind of come up with like this easy to build unit framework. So like if a student can come up with an idea and help me connect it to the Spanish speaking world, then I can usually whip something up in a couple weeks. So yeah, that's about it for content for me.
I have some other,
there's like content within the units that I give choice on. As
I love the idea of like, I would be comfortable with you as your teacher. It would reach my goals if you use the heavily modified version of something, but maybe you want to look at the authentic source and it's kind of its full thing. I think one little tip that I've done for that is when I can, I try to gloss new vocabulary with footnotes rather than in line, because mm-hmm. that way, if the student wants to read it and can read it and just feels confident reading it through and either determining from context or knows it already, then they can skip over the footnote and just kind of keep going. Or if they are saying, you know, I'm getting stuck on this word, they can look down to the bottom. I've also done the same kind of with writing assessments where I have provided some sentence stems, but on the back of the page. And I kind of tell students like, oh, like start writing on the front. And if you feel like you get stuck, like flip it over and like take a look. And so you kind of can see who is approaching the assessment that way.
A lot is very observable. A little bit of what do we do with the information as well.
So they may need some more input on these key phrases or key vocabulary to feel more confident to do that independently.
I'm taking that.
And it's nice too, because again, it's in a place where if they don't want to use it, they don't have to put their eyes on it if they don't want to. I think in terms of content as well, and maybe we're just kind of getting into differentiating everything. Content, doing free voluntary reading or free choice reading is inherently differentiated. If you're able to provide a lot of varied texts on different topics with different backgrounds and different text levels and complexity, that allows students to choose, have a choice in what they're learning and how they go about it. I also show the students Bryce Hedstrom's reading bookmark that says, don't read a single word, skip over words that you can't figure out. If it really is necessary, look it up in the glossary. I think the glossary in some of these books is very differentiated because you either can use it or you cannot. And that's kind of the choice of the individual learner. Like, how much challenge am I going to give myself? Am I okay with a little bit of noise? Am I not? And when you're offering a wide variety of stuff, like, again, they're choosing the level of challenge, but they're all getting input in the language, which is ultimately my goal, and increasing their writing and reading skills with that. I, for instance, have these two boys who are like, I'm going to power through Harry Potter. And I'm like, that is incredibly difficult and would be difficult for me because there's magic words in there and I don't know those in German. But darn if they're not sitting there with the English book open, underneath the German book, just trucking along, and kids like, I'm almost done with the first page. Bless you. Like, if this feels like a good challenge to you, maybe I'm like over here being like, oh, it's not the most efficient use of time, but being able to look back on something. Yeah, if it's motivating for him, and I kind of keep giving them outs, like, if you find this to be extremely tedious, you are always welcome to choose a much more comprehensible Brandon Brown book. But as long as they are interested in that sort of thing, like, what a cool thing to walk away and be like, I read a couple pages of Harry Potter in German, and that's super complicated. And like, good for them. Whatever. Every kid has kind of different goals coming into class. So free choice reading is inherently differentiated. And I encourage our listeners to build diverse classroom libraries as much as possible. Be on the lookout for books about different topics by different authors, especially authors writing in their own voice about their own cultures. That's great. Another tip I have is apropos feedback, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, which is, and I got this from Meredith White. It was the idea that we can have students tell us how much feedback or what variety of feedback that they want to kind of meet them where they are in their motivation in the course and what they think they can handle. And so she provides four options, and I provide the same exact ones, which is one, give me the everything treatment, kind of like go every, you know, red pen, every single thing. To be frank, I don't do every single thing, but I do enough to make the students feel like I really gave it my go. So you give them all sorts of red pens. There's one, am I comprehensible? And then you can just highlight or underline any parts where you're like, well, you said this and that made me think you meant this, but I don't think that's what you meant, that sort of thing. And you can have conversations about comprehensibility. There's where did I shine? So the teacher highlighting places where the student took a risk with language and kind of made a really nice sentence or a really nice paragraph, or, you know, used some great vocabulary, something like that. So all students are getting the rubric feedback, you know, you marking the different sections of the rubric, but they can choose like how much in depth they want to go after this. I always have my students do something with this. So even if they only ask for the rubric feedback, they need to be looking at the rubric on their own, I guess, and figuring out where, how they want to upgrade. So every student is going to rewrite or produce another draft of something. And so I have an idea for their baseline already and then can just kind of adjust if they've made the corrections and things that I've given.
Yeah, I like that. Another way that I've lightened my load on feedback to just like everyone gets the rubric every single time. And then one class gets the additional feedback. This works if you're doing, like, this is the first time that this has ever worked for me because I'm actually kind of organized for the first time ever. But, like, students also need to, you need to know how many assessments you're going to have and make sure that all students will get the same, at least the same amount of feedback. I would feel, anyway, that would be my opinion, is I would want to try to make sure that everyone got the same kind of feedback at least once. I usually try to do that at the beginning of the year. I go really, really, really hard the first week, and then I say, or the first time that they write, and then I say, if you want this kind of feedback in the future, feel free to stop by for like 5 minutes, and I'm happy to go over it with you. Not everyone has that freedom in their schedules, but that's just something that has been able to work for me.
We kind of touched on this at the beginning of the episode as well, is like, how do you differentiate well having whole class discussions? I think kind of gear shifting up and down the input in complexity can be a great way to do that. So, you know, starting with the simplest sentence, you know, he does this, she does this, I do this, and then adding more details with prepositional phrases and then adding connectors to connect ideas. And so, you know, taking two sentences that you're certain
is this
all students
like
have,
eliciting from students?
This is providing input. So taking two sentences, for instance, that all students have comprehended and then connecting them with a connector. Those sorts of things can be ways to add just a little bit of challenge for your high flyers. And
like, sorry, is this connecting things that other people have said?
Yes. And it could be. Let me gather that. So
like
connecting
kind of
people,
collaborative?
People says the. Connecting things that have come up in class conversation or about the content. Yeah, totally. Okay. So like, you know, throwing in a because or a therefore or something, that sort of thing.
I bet that works really well in Write and Discuss.
Yes. Yeah, Write and Discuss is a great way to differentiate there too. Because you're taking stuff that you know this entire class has comprehended and maybe zhuzhing it up a little bit, dare I say. We might also use, that one's for Brian. Brian loves when I say zhuzhing. We might also do differentiated comprehension checks. Bryce Hedstrom is another great source on this, what sort of questions we ask. The kind of like most accommodating level being, what did I just say? So you need students to make sure that they understand what's going on. And then kind of ratcheting up all the way in difficulty to asking students who are more higher flyers, like, why did I say this instead of this to mean this? And that can be places to point out little grammary things and endings, those sorts of things. But I think we can also differentiate our questions that we ask of students. So we've talked about the kind of question ladder, starting from yes, no questions up to this or that questions, to open-ended questions, to tell me about. That can be a great way to differentiate for students who are at different levels of readiness to produce. And then considering, you know, okay, I've been hitting this kid with a lot of yes, no questions. Can I upgrade them to a this or that question?
Yeah.
And that takes knowing how these students have been responding very well.
Yeah. You know what I need to do that I haven't done yet? Magic cards. Sorry, that was just a thought that crossed my mind as you were going over that from our discussion about, I don't even remember what was that discussion, but magic cards came up.
That's like a formative assessment. Maybe it came up when we talked about formative assessment.
Dynamic assessment, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I need to make a note of that for tomorrow.
You're going to hold on to data about each student, too. Actually, if you can mark down the quality of response, then you can look back and be like, okay, I've been asking a lot of these sorts of questions and getting these sorts of answers. Where do we go? I think free writes are a good differentiated activity where students get the choice of what they write about. That's a nice thing. That can be overwhelming, so you might offer options with the caveat, like, also write about whatever you feel like it. Maris Hawkins created a choice board for reading activities that I really love, providing choices and how students respond to a reading, which could be creating a little dictionary page, creating true-false quizzes, doing a summary, like pulling the five most important whatevers out of the thing, do a who, what, when, where, why. All of these show reading comprehension, but in different sorts of ways and to the desires of the learner. So that is a good way to motivate and differentiate.
Something that I have done, and, you know, this is kind of a crossover with project-based learning, but last year I ironed out some details of a book report project, and now I'm using it 4 times this year. Students are doing it independently. And in that, because part of their rubric on it is product presentation, the only thing that they're getting scored on is whether or not they have a product. Like, it can be literally anything. I give them a bunch of options because, you know, it's hard being told, like, do whatever you want without any options, so they can present it in any way that they want. Like, I've had a student created a poster, a student created a TikTok video, another student made an Instagram profile for a character. So, like, a bunch of different ways to show, they get to choose how they want to present the information, but I can have the freedom to do that because the assessment is really coming from after the presentation. We do a Q&A. I ask them about their book. Usually it's something about, like, what was the challenge that the character faced? What was a lesson that was learned? Stuff, something like that. Just to let them practice their presentation, memorize their presentation if you want. But just know that if you're using these words, I'm going to assume that you can use them. So when I ask you questions using them, we should be able to continue the conversation. So that's where the assessment comes in. So they get the freedom to pick whatever book they want and whatever type of product they want to present. I even give them the choice of when. So we've got this weird Wednesday schedule, so they can sign up for any Wednesday in the quarter, and then they just get everything turned in the day before and present in class. And then you've got that all wrapped up. Bam!
I have kind of 2 more things. One is like a specific thing, and then one was kind of just like a general consideration. And the specific thing being, like, providing paper copies of texts, but also online as much as you can. Because you can, I've showed students how to, like, essentially paste a text into Google Translate, not to translate it even, just to have it read aloud to them. Like, if you're like, I haven't really developed my inner ear for German, like, how can I develop that more? Like, have someone read to you. Or just having the text online. I'm sure there are a lot of screen readers and other accessibility options.
I know if you use Canvas, they've got the Microsoft screen reader.
Right.
And that even, like, if you want to be a grammar nerd, you can even, like, have it highlight all the verbs and everything. But check that out if you use Canvas.
Yeah. Yeah. But providing it in multiple ways that students can review the same material, and using digital tools, there's a lot of ways to, you know, have it read to you. There's, you know, analytical AIs that'll look at your writing and give you a little writing feedback after our long episode about AI. But, and I think the kind of final thing is that the study talked a lot about motivation. Like, how do we get students motivated? How does differentiation increase motivation to learn the language and kind of beget that increased proficiency? And I always come back to what I've learned from Dr. Liam Printer's Motivated Classroom podcast about motivation, which is competence, autonomy, and relatedness. Are students having opportunities to relate to each other and you? Are you giving them some sort of choice in what they're doing? And do they come out of it knowing that they have learned something? Do they come out of it knowing that they've become more competent? And I think that all create opportunities for differentiation. So keeping that in the back of your mind, I think, can be a powerful reminder.
All right. You got anything else, Ben?
I think we slayed.
Hey, Ben, should we let them know about our little secret? Oh, just not even a hint?
Nah.
Nah. Okay.
Keep listening.
Yeah. Go out and slay.
Bye.
Bye.